Hello and welcome to The Tips, where this week we are previewing the BMW International Open from Munich and the Travelers Championship from Connecticut. As ever, we have the help of some expert guests who will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. This week, we have Sporting Life's Ben Coley, as well as golf writer Martin Matthews joining us again on The Tips. First things first, Martin, did you enjoy the US Open despite working some challenging hours?
Thanks, Ollie. Yeah, good morning to you. Good morning, Ben. Did I enjoy the US Open? Bit of a mixed bag, really. It was a slow burner for me. I should give the sort of initial comment that my tip didn't perform very well. So I guess that gives me a slightly slanted view. But trying to stay neutral, I'm not a fan of 62s in the US Open. I've got to be honest, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and I like to see them grinded out, and I used to enjoy where level par was the target, but I accept that maybe things have moved on a little bit. I wasn't a huge fan of the course initially, particularly. I wasn't a fan of the sort of adage of par 3.5 and par 4.5 holes. So you had some holes, obviously, that were just gettable, particularly on the front nine, the third, when the balls are just pulled off the tee shot, and then suddenly you're going into sort of this hugely challenging back nine. I'd have liked it a little bit more sort of, should we say, evened out over the 18. But obviously, as the weekend progressed, things toughened up a bit. They didn't really get the breeze, to be fair, that they needed a bit of. So you can't fault the USGA for that, obviously. And in the end, of course, we got a fantastic leaderboard heading into Sunday. So I guess obviously the viewing hours didn't make it great for us over here, and also the lack of atmosphere with the fans, which was obviously talked about a lot, didn't help either. You know, give me the raucous New Yorkers any day over the prawn sandwiches in LA, as it were. So did I enjoy it? Yeah. Overall, it was a major championship. How can you not enjoy it? But there were certainly things that preferred in others over recent years. So, yeah.
And as you said, Sunday, there was an amazing leaderboard. And coming to you, Ben, I don't know which one of these names is going to hurt you more, but it was Wyndham Clark who was crowned champion. He opened up around 70-1 pre-tournament, holding off Rory McIlroy. So I don't know which angle to go with here as a huge Rory fan, but also you did write early in the year the player to watch this year on the PGA Tour is Wyndham Clark, but I sense he may have just eluded you. But talk us through your emotions through the week.
Yeah, look, I'll be honest, if you read what I wrote about Wyndham Clark, I did say I don't think he's going to become a major champion. I just think he'll win on the PGA Tour. He was a massive eye catcher towards the end of last year, and he's a great advert for the fact that in this sport we just cannot reach conclusions after 2 or 3 years of watching someone play, because people tend to, oh, he won't win this, he can't do that. Well, Wyndham Clark's one of the long-standing maidens of the PGA Tour. The one thing we knew for a fact about him is that he had bundles of talent, always had it from his amateur days, and it's taken time. You know, we heard a lot about his personal story over the weekend, and we've heard as well that he's been seeing a sports psychologist who I think said to be cocky and enjoy yourself or whatever it was. So I'm hoping Rory writes that on his glove for Hoylake. But he was brilliant. And I think particularly his chip on 17, I thought was a magnificent shot that will probably be underrated. We hear a lot about Gary Woodland's chip pitch across the 17th green at Pebble Beach, which effectively sealed the US Open for him. I don't think Clark's was that far off that level in terms of how impressive it was in the moment. He just bogeyed 15. He just bogeyed 16. He was trying to fend off Rory McIlroy. He probably knew that even a lot of American fans didn't necessarily want him to win. And he's hit a chip from a tight lie to 6 inches on 17. And then the two-putt on 18 as well. Just absolutely fantastic. On Rory, I'll just say it was an opportunity miss. There is no doubt about that. I take on board the view that some have articulated that he was unlucky because he's played a solid round of golf and someone's just held firm. I do think on this occasion, he probably has himself to blame. I think Rory at his absolute peak, when there wasn't this question over whether he will win a major again, which, by the way, I think he will. At his absolute peak, he doesn't three putt from just off the eighth green. He doesn't hit that wedge into the bunker on 14. And I dare say he gives himself a real look at birdie over those last three holes as well. So massively frustrating, I'll be honest with you. But what can I say? The final thing, I don't want to go on too much about this because I know we've got a lot to get through this week, but he will get loads of criticism. He has had loads of criticism, and that's right. But boy, is he perseverant. I mean, I think it's one of the most underrated things about Rory McIlroy. This is a golfer who has not left the world's top 15 in 14 years. Every time he's had to answer a question, he's bounced back and he's done it. And okay, there is one question that remains. Will he win a major championship again? And until he does, he will rightly have critics. But one thing we know is he'll keep trying. He'll be there at Hoylake. He'll be one of the favourites, if not the favourite, possibly. And I guarantee you over the next 5 years, he will certainly have chances to win a major. And I make him a very strong favourite to win one. Hopefully it's soon.
Because for follow up very quickly and just, one observation, follow up on Wyndham Clark and a quick question for Ben, because I'll be interested in his thoughts. I saw commented on last night that I think it was 7 starts ago, Wyndham Clark was in an opposite field event. Yeah, that, you know, sort of credit to him as to how he's obviously, like Ben said, he'd been trending hugely, but he was, well, I don't know, favourite to win out in the Corrales or wherever it was, and or Puerto Rico. And yeah, and now here he is with what he's done. So yeah, huge credit to him. And Ben, just curious on your views on Rory's tee shot on 17. Do you think he deliberately went left like the TV guys are trying to say? Because I could see no logic in that, in the angle in to the pin, because he had no chance of getting it close. But, you know, there they are saying he's driven left out onto 2 for a better angle. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the sort of guttural roar he let off after the shot was one of dismay rather than pleasure. So, no, I think he tried to hit a 2-yard draw and he hit a 20-yard hook, to be honest with you. So I'd say that was the most frustrating part of the viewing experience on Sunday night for me. Obviously, being so frustrated with Rory being 40 feet away and hitting the lip a lot, by the way, was that second shot into 17 when the crowd roared. I thought, here we go, he's hit it to a foot and he's 40 feet long. But no, he didn't mean it, did he? Definitely not.
Yeah.
It was a very impressive performance all around from him, and nearly as impressive as Wyndham Clark, whose short game was exceptional. And really good from you there, Ben, mentioning Hoylake, obviously where Rory won the Open 2014. And exciting to see Tommy Fleetwood finish with another 63. He's always from up that way, Liverpool. So he could have a great chance in just a month away. But that's enough on the major. Always good to talk about it, but it was phenomenal. We've got two great tournaments this week on both sides of the pond. So let's start with the BMW International Open from Golf Club München Eikenried. The players return to Munich and the traditional venue for the BMW International Open at Golf Club München Eikenried. The par 72, 7,300-yard course gave us a dramatic finale at last year's event, where Hao Tong Li secured a very emotional victory after holding a 50-foot putt to beat Thomas Peters in a playoff. The list of champions here is very impressive, including Victor Hovland, who secured his first DP World Tour title in some style in 2021, Ernie Els, Colin Montgomery, Jimenez. The list does go on, including even John Daly. So Ben, let's go to you first. And we had Kit Alexander on the pod a few weeks ago talk about the state of German golf with multiple winners on the tour recently. And we're returning here just a few weeks after the Porsche European Open, where Martin was actually on with Kit and tipped up Yannick Paul himself. He couldn't get it done that week, but he is the home favourite and sixth in the betting market. Can you see him or another German going very well and potentially winning this week?
Yeah, I really can. I think German golf is in a fantastic place. We had a winner of the women's amateur on Sunday as well for another boost. You know, it's and I do think there's a legacy aspect here. When you think about what Martin Kaymer achieved in the early part of the previous decade, Sofia Popov, inspired by that, absolutely no doubt, and her inspiring others. And I think there's a wealth of talent across the DP World Tour and the Ladies European Tour from Germany. There are a couple of amateurs in this field who have potentially very big futures as well. We know about maybe someone like Matty Schmidt, who's coming through and has been a bit hit and miss so far, but has shown what he's capable of. And I think German golf's in a really good place. I mean, you've got Nick Backham, a winner this year. I think Freddie Schott is one to keep an eye on at a massive price this week. He seems to have found a little something lately. And I think if you go back to the European Open, one of the key storylines there. Okay, it was all about Tom McKibben in the end, a fantastic performance from him. But Max Kiefer and Marcel Seam charging at him on the final day. And that event, we've seen it before. I think Bernd Ritthammer went close. Alan John went close to winning that. And in this one, Martin Keimer, second to Hovland, a previous winner himself. I think we're almost guaranteed a very strong challenge from the home team, as it were, in an event, I have to say, I think is fabulous and a really fun golf course as well.
Yeah. Speaking of the course, Martin, as mentioned, it plays 7,300 yards, quite a regulation sort of set up with a four par threes, four par fives. And last year, the top two in the leaderboard headed up the field in strokes gained tee to green and made a lot of birdies. Are they some of the stats that you've been looking at when choosing your picks? And what else has really caught your attention?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there, Ollie. And I think this across the two events we're looking at this week is sort of the phraseology we're going to hit a lot of. Find your fairways, find your greens, and hold your putts. I know that sounds a little bit obvious and trite, but yeah, it's one of those courses where it's right there in front of you. It's a low scoring birdie fest, basically, as we can see from the winning totals we've had over recent years, and give yourself plenty of looks. Bogey avoidance has been quite key here over recent years, although Houtong did make a couple more. I think he dropped 9 shots over the course of the week, but made up with it with 4 eagles and numerous birdies. But as a whole, the winners in recent years have managed to keep a fairly clean card. So yeah, a hot putter and find your fairways and find your greens, basically, is no real nothing hidden. It's all right there in front of you.
Great stuff. Okay, yeah, Houtong Lee, you mentioned he was 66-1 winner last time round, and we have a look at the top of the market here this year. We've got similar names again. Adrian Meronk 14-1, Rasmus Højgaard 18-1, Antoine Rosner's 22s, and then Yannick Paul and Victor Perez at 25-1. So let's get into it and into the tips themselves. So Martin, let's start with you. Who are you backing as your first outright pick for this week in Munich?
Right. Well, I'm going a little bit down the board this week on both of my picks, and I'm starting around the 66-1 mark. It's 1 point each way on Frédéric Lacroix, and I hope I've got the pronunciation right there. A Frenchman, probably not a household name to many people, and he's been quietly sort of making his way up the game. He was a 3-time winner on the Alps Tour, came through onto the Challenge Tour where he didn't win, but did enough to win his card. And it was a bit of a struggle for him last year, but this was one of the events that he did pop up in. He played very nicely in, finished 10th. And he's now got 2 top 10s in Germany, because he was 5th a couple of weeks ago in the Porsche as well, or a few weeks ago, which obviously we've been talking about, and 12th more recently in the Scandi Mix. So he's finding a little bit of form. And I was interested to hear him say in an interview that he did after a good opening round in Belgium a few weeks back that it's really an advantage to him seeing courses for the second time around. So that week in Belgium was a good example. I think he finished 33rd, having missed the cut last year. Obviously, his improvement in the Porsche was hugely, his performance in the Porsche was a huge improvement. So here we got a track that he did play very well on last year. He's a very neat and tidy player. So I guess that fits in with sort of the type of player we're looking for. As I say, a bit of a fairways and greens merchant. And what's improved a little bit of late as well has been his putting, certainly in those last two performances, because that has been his weak link. If you look at his stats, he's been sort of down in the 3-figure mark in the putting over the last, over the course of the season as a whole. So he's someone who caught my eye. I mean, it's an obvious course form, current form combination, but the sort of clincher on it as well was something that some people might not know. He actually went to university in Germany. So he spent 2.5 years, I think it was, at university in Germany, played obviously a lot of golf. Mannheim was where he was based, I believe, which is about 3 hours away from Munich. So that could tie into the fact that he's obviously produced a couple of good performances on the DP World Tour in Germany now. So yeah, he caught my eye, and I thought, I mean, I think not unsurprisingly, bearing everything I've gone through, he's been sort of quite well supported over the last 24 hours, but still I think 66-1's a good price. So yeah, 1 point each way, Frédéric Lacroix.
Yeah, great. That's right. He did. He opened up 3 figures actually very briefly. And he has got good memories here. I mean, last year that top 10 finish he got obviously ended Sunday with the low score of 66 to sneak in there. So good memories from the course last year. And that's 1 point each way. So Ben, who is heading up your selections this week?
I'm going to go towards the top of the market first with Rasmus Højgaard. I've been a little bit wary of Rasmus since he came back from the injury, which kept him out of the start of the season. Obviously missed the Hero Cup on a couple of big tournaments. But I was just kind of waiting to see him drive the ball better. He's done everything pretty well since he came back, but he hadn't really driven it well. And that was the case in the KLM Open a couple of weeks ago when he drove it poorly and did everything else so well that he still managed to challenge for that title. So more significant in a way, I thought, was his sort of mid-pack finish in the European Open afterwards, because he did at last drive the ball really well. If he can do that again, he returns to a course where he's played really well both visits so far. I think he's fourth in scoring over those who've played the last two renewals. He's driven it well here last year. His irons were really good the year before. And I think it's a good course for him. If you think about where he's performed well, Kranz wouldn't be an obvious fit, but there are a couple of drivable par fours here, and that's very much something you've got to do at Kranz. Get after those par fours and sort of chip and putt for birdie rather than long-range approach shots. And we've got an altitude factor here as well, albeit a little bit less significant than up there in the Alps, of course. But the other one's the Belfry, and I think the Belfry is a potentially very good guide to this. I remember Richard Bland nearly winning this tournament when Andres Romero caused a massive surprise. And obviously, Bland went on to win his first DP World Tour title at the British Masters at the Belfry. And there are quite a few players who seem to perform well at both courses. So that was a nice pointer. And so was the top 10 finish in Dubai. So if you think about the Dubai Desert Classic, Hao Tong Li's won there. Victor Hovland has won there. Richard Bland almost won there. And it's another golf course, which is a par 72. It's got a couple of drivable par fours. It's got reachable par fives. It's framed by trees. The rough can be a problem if you stray into it, probably less so here in Germany. So I thought they were kind of an obvious bedfellow, if you like. So yeah, Rasmus Højgaard, the pick of the favourites. And another factor potentially in his favour, it's always hard to weigh up, of course. I know Lucas Herbert won straight off the plane earlier this season, but most of the big names here did play in the US Open last week. Adrian Meronk, of course, who deserves to be favourite. Roman Longasque, who's playing really, really well and has good course form here. Pablo Larrazabal. These are players who've got to go again. And it's a long way from California, this. So I was happy enough to scrub them off the list. And that left me with Højgaard as the man to beat.
Yep. Very, very fair, and some great course correlations there. And he's 18-1 still, Rasmus. That's 3 points each way from Ben for the three-time winner on the DP World Tour. Okay, second and final pick for this event, please, from you, Martin.
Thank you. Yeah, just actually coming back on something Ben just mentioned there as well, going back to my man Lacroix, he also performed well at the Belfry last year, finished 21st, I think, and that was something that caught my eye also, certainly with Ben 100% on that correlation. Yeah, second man I'm going to go for, Andy Sullivan, and he's, again, sort of, you know, in the sort of third tier of the betting, if you like, or even fourth tier of the betting, 100-1, I believe, we can get on Andy for seven places each way. And he's always been someone to keep an eye on low scoring events. Obviously, his most recent win came in the sort of post COVID era where he won the English Open, I think it was, or English Championship rather, it went under the name of it, something like 25 or 27 under at Hanbury Manor. He's won a couple of other low scoring birdie fests in his four tour victories. And there's been some signs from him of late that, you know, he's on the verge of a big performance. He's as we know, there's what, probably a shot a day, a missed putt a day, if that, between finishing 35th and top five on the across the tours. And he's been sort of plodding around in the mid 30s and 40s for the last few events. It's the putter that's been stone cold for him of late. He's I think ranking 103rd and 102nd for it in his last two starts, but he's also produced some reasonably solid stuff from tee to green. He was 26th tee to green at the Porsche, 48th tee to green at the Scandi event, was actually 9th in approach at the KLM before that as well. So tee to green, it's not looking it's looking pretty good, but the putter's been holding him back. And of course, he's not someone who's been known as a bad putter, particularly over his career. He's been a sort of, I guess, a middling guy on the greens who can get hot, as we've seen in these low scoring events. So hopefully, as we always say, with somebody who's struggling with a putter, he can find that one good week on the greens. And I do like the fact that he's 10th on tour in par five scoring as well, which obviously we've talked about how the par fives are there to be had this week. And of course, he's got a top five or a fifth place finish on his resume here as well. So he's obviously a proven winner, which a lot of the guys, you know, in this field aren't. So I was happy to roll the dice on him at three-figure odds.
Yes, 100-1, 1 point each way there from Martin. And as you say, fifth in 2021 with all four rounds in the 60s. And actually, it was a different course, but he obviously likes Germany because top 10 in 2018 as well for Andy Sullivan. So there you go. And Ben, you're just going to round us off here with your second outright pick, please, for the event.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. There's Sean Crocker, who was runner-up in the Scandinavian mix last time. And that was some effort because he opened with a 74. Over the final 54 holes, he was the best player in the field. And I think straightforwardly, when he's gone close to winning before, he's played well thereafter. So he does tend to hang on to it. I like his game for this. I kind of did want a couple of guys in my team who can get after these two short par fours and set up those eagle chances. As Martin alluded to, I think Hal Tonley made a handful of eagles last year. And obviously Thomas Peters was leaning on his driver a lot in his performance, probably should have won the tournament. So it's quite a simple case, really. Crocker's putter is the only thing that has stopped him contending here. I think if you look at how he's played the course, you might think it doesn't suit, but he was the second best ball striker in the field last year, but he was one of the worst putters. Anyone who's followed his career closely will know that that is what you're buying into. You might get a shocking week on the greens. And I'm a little bit sort of trepidatious because he was really good on the greens last time in Sweden. And there's obviously a chance he's unable to do that again. But I'll focus on the positives of his long game. He's a quality player, Sean Crocker. He should be a regular contender on the DP World Tour, which he has been at times in the past. And hopefully second place last time is a sign of things to come this summer, because he's definitely capable of winning again in the coming months.
Yeah, absolutely. He's 60-1 still available for Sean Crocker. And that's 1 point each way for the charismatic pseudo American Zimbabwean that he is. And as you say, four of his last eight rounds here in the 60s. So if he keeps it under control, his ball, he could go well and obviously gets a lot of birdies. Ben, we're just going to stick with you because, as ever, we like a special bet here. And you are in charge of that for the B&W International Open. What's the market you've gone for and who's the player?
Well, you asked me earlier about the German Challenge, and I think the best of them in value terms this week is Marcel Schneider. And one of the things I like is that he's been there and done it on home soil. Two of his best efforts on the DP World Tour came in the European Open, and he's got two top 20s here. His top 20 last year, I think we can upgrade because he'd come over from the US Open. He started slowly, he finished strongly. I think he's become a really good player in his 30s. He's one of those late bloomers. And if we're going for the top 30 finish here for a reason, you go back to last year, top 30 sort of every week, six times in a row, I believe. And it, over the last sort of 15 months, he's got 18 of them. So he's just really consistent. He's a player who is strong through the bag. He'll gain a stroke off the tee, a stroke with his approaches, a stroke around the greens, and a stroke with a putter on a normal week, right? And if he can just sort of spike with one area, then he's got a title challenge in him. So I do like him a lot for this week in general. And for a top 30, he is a short price, but I think that reflects the fact that he really ought to play well.
Yeah, he is. He's 6-5 there, so that's 2 points. And we saw this approach last week, Xander Schauffele, top 20, and it landed very easily at the same sort of price. But yeah, amazing stats looking at actually that. Accuracy off the tee and around the greens and scrambling, he's top 8 for all of them in the tour. And as you say, he joint was lowest score on Sunday last year with Frederic Lacroix. They were the two who got 66s. So comes in good memories. So there you go. That is the BMW International Open. Now it's time for a game of Who Am I? Yeah, it's everyone's favourite game, especially Ben Coley's after his James Morrison efforts last time round. It's Who Am I, where I pick a player in the field this week, give some tips, and we see and test the knowledge of Martin and Ben. So let's get straight into it. First one, I have finished 44th in both of my last two starts.
Mike Lorenzo Vera. It's not him.
It's not him. Okay, we'll go next one. In the second round of the 2015 Open de France, I made 18 consecutive fours for a round of one over, the first time that's ever happened on the tour.
Over to you here, Ben, I think.
They get easier.
Open de France 2015. Okay. Yeah. He missed the cut in the Open de France 8 years ago. This is harder than James Morrison, Ollie, and I've not forgiven you for that.
It's getting easier. Here we go.
I'm going to say Mike Lorenzo Vera again, but it can't be him because it wasn't in the first time.
It's not. And it's not his brother who's a coach of a few of the guys out there. No, we're going number three. I won the men's individual stroke play gold medal at the Youth Olympics in 2014.
Goodness. Marcus gold Chenault. Medal. No, that'd be too young. Okay, 2014, loads of pars a year. So he played the Open de France a year after he won the gold medal at the Youth Olympics. He made 18 pars.
Correct.
That's mad. Very young. Presumably then he was a Frenchman on an invite. So no, you're shaking your head. Thank you. I was trying to get a little hint out of you. He was really, he played the Open de France in 2015, a year after he won a gold.
You keep me the educated guesses, Ben. I'll sit here looking studious.
Martin, I think everyone's backing you to take pinch this right now. This would really tortoise and hare scenario if you just say one name. We're going to the next one. I'm a two-time winner on the DP. Two-time winner on the DP World Tour. That's the penultimate clue.
Two-time winner. You should give us like five. Do you just want to have a chat, you two, and I'll figure it out.
Two-time winner. Okay.
I feel like I can give the last one because this will really do it. I'm Italian.
You're Italian?
Andrea Pavan. No, is he in the field this week? No, it won't be Pavan. He would be too.
It's not Pavan.
Renato Paratore?
Ben Coley. Renato Paratore. Oh,
goodness.
Well, Renato Paratore, the wildest operator on the DP World Tour, made 18 fours in one round. No wonder we didn't get it. No wonder.
I was lost there. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, that's fine, Martin. We just wanted to bend through the pain, which was great. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't have to use clue six. My name rhymes with Pinato Raratore. So well done. Well done for that. And just a reminder to all you listeners, if you enjoy a game but don't want to bet, then please do join our fantasy game on the DP World Tour website. It would be absolutely perfect for you to select six players for the week and compete against your friends and others for bragging rights. On the other side of the Atlantic, we are back at TPC River Highlands again, where US Open record maker Xander Schauffele returns to defend his title he won last year with a commanding two-shot victory. We've had some very dramatic moments here at the Travelers, most notably with Jordan Spieth's hold bunker shot in the first playoff hole against Daniel Berger back in 2017. And the Golden Triangle will be waiting for the players as they approach the end of their rounds on holes 15, 16 and 17, with the 15th being the drivable par 4 just under 300 yards and always gives a lot of excitement. So, Martin, to you first. The TPC River Highlands is known again for low scores. Famously, Jim Furyk with the lowest ever PGA round here in 2016 with a 58, which was his second sub 60 round of his career. Are you, for everything you've seen and read, are you expecting much of the same this time around?
Yes, in a word. And there's a few things we need to factor in this week. And first of all, of course, as is always the case here, it's post-major hangover potentially. But a slight twist on it is that we have a designated event status that has sort of put on the event this year, which means there's a lot of guys pitching up who potentially wouldn't have probably pitched up. And I think we saw at the Heritage earlier this year that very similar scenario. And what we got in the end was three big names who always play the Heritage in Spieth, Fitzpatrick and Cantlay, who are obviously lovers of Hilton Head, all three of them. They basically battled it out. And the guys who were there because they had to be there, apart from Rory, obviously, who wasn't there, basically sort of plodded around and did what you'd expect them to do, which is half-decent performances, but nothing spectacular. So I'm thinking we're going to get more of the same, low scoring, some of the bigger names who like the track coming to the fore, but those who haven't been here so much over the years, perhaps again just putting solid on spectacular performances in. Obviously, it measures under 7,000 yards, which means we can get two types of player here, the bomber like Bubba Watson, who's thrived over the years, and then your plotter like Ches Reavy, who can pick the course apart. It doesn't, you know, distance is no key here. So again, tee to green, low scoring, hold your putts, I think is what we're looking for, and we look like we're in for a reasonable week weather-wise, so no really strong winds or anything like that. So yeah, I expect another birdie fest, basically, Ollie.
There we go. Okay, and Ben, we're looking through some of those previous winners, excluding a couple of 19 unders last year, I think, and DJ. It's always around that sort of, it's been 12 to 17 under for the other 10 years, going back to 2010, and the course really seems to put an emphasis on really strong tee to green, with average strokes gained rankings for the last 10 winners from tee to green was around third or fourth. So that is clearly something that, to look out for. Is that the main attribute, or was there anything else that you looked at going into this week?
Yeah, I think the key dynamic here really is that versus your average PGA Tour course, it places a greater emphasis on hitting the fairway than hitting the ball a long way. We've got a couple of long hitting winners, but Bubba Watson's a law unto himself, and Dustin Johnson was hitting irons and three woods off the tee and had a great putting week as well when he won here in the summer of 2020. So yeah, it's definitely a course where anyone can compete. I think they're reasonably rare. And it's interesting as a designated event, because as Martin said, it's not necessarily one that, everybody would be here for, but not just that. It's one where though the biggest weapon of certainly two of the best three players in the world is a little bit nullified, if you like. If you drive the ball 330 yards in a straight line, it's going to be an advantage anywhere. But it's just not the right choice on a lot of these holes, you know, to hit drivers. So that's it for me. It's trying to find players who perhaps most weeks are fighting an uphill battle, but this week they're not. I think that's the key factor. No doubt whoever does win will have had a, you know, top 30 putting week, but I don't think that's the club we should really be focusing on, especially when you look at a roll of honour, which includes players like Russell Knox and Ches Reavie, who went about things fairways and greens first of all.
Yeah, there are some big prices in there. I mean, Ches Reavie was 70s, and going back even further, Ken Duke 150-1, and Kevin Streelman 125-1. So not big hitters, and there could be some big prices tipped up by you. Just before we get into that, good to have a quick look at the top of the market, and it shows, unsurprisingly, Scotty Scheffler at the 7-1, which seems like a copy and paste most weeks at the moment there, followed by John Rahm at 11s, and just behind him is the trio of Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay at 12-1. But it's very exciting to see so many of the US Open players here, big names, who they all finish, you know, in the top 15 as well. But let's have a look if any feature in our tips from the experts. So Ben, let's start with you this time. Who is opening up your selections for the Travelers Championship?
So the one I really like from the top sort of six or seven in the betting is Colin Morikawa. I think he's got a game which is perfectly suited for this golf course. He's accurate off the tee. We know his approach play is his biggest strength. He's been putting a little bit better recently, and I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence that he's played a lot of golf on Bermuda grass greens over the last 3 or 4 months, not exclusively, but a fair bit. And he seems to have been putting a little bit better away from that. That was the case last week at the US Open. His approach play is always good, but there's a higher tier that he can reach, and I think he's reaching it. I think through three rounds of the Memorial, he was on course to be gaining sort of 8 strokes with his approaches, had he not had to withdraw from back spasms. And he was in the top 10 for that category again last week at the US Open. The US Open leaderboard, as it so often is, Wyndham Clark, Rory McIlroy, Scotty Scheffler, players who drive the ball a lot further than he does. I think it's always going to be a bit of a challenge for him to stay competitive. The fact that he did so is a testament to the rest of his game. And again, in terms of the course, it's very rare for Morikawa to play one like this. He tends to adopt a schedule which follows the money and the competitiveness, right? He plays where all the best players play. And so often they're on longer golf courses. And this addition of the designated events has changed that a little bit, because we've had this in the Heritage. When he has turned up at courses like the Heritage, he's got a top 10 there. He's got a top 10 at the Sony, top 10 at the Zozo, top 10 at the Olympics. He's gone really close to winning on all these shorter courses. Colonial would be one that correlates really well with this. You mentioned Spieth and Berger, who were first and second here. Well, Berger obviously joined Spieth as a champion at Colonial, and when he did, he beat Morikawa, who probably should have won the tournament. So there's loads of reasons to expect him to play well. And if you go back to 2019, he just turned professional, and he was sixth at halfway on his third professional start here at the Travelers. Had a poor Saturday, bounced back on Sunday, and obviously a few weeks later was a PGA Tour winner. But I think it's a really good course for him, and he just hasn't fancied it after the US Open in the past. I'm glad that he's back, and if he putts above average, I think he'll be certainly in the top 10 and hopefully the man to beat on Sunday.
Yeah, I noticed exactly the same thing. His course form isn't amazing, but that's he hasn't done it for a while, and that may have put people off, including the bookies. So a nice price there at 25-1, and that was 2 points each way for Colin Morikawa from Ben as his main pick. And Martin, who's your pick from the top of the market to start us off?
Yeah, I'm going pretty much back up towards the top of the market, and I'm going to give Patrick Cantlay a chance. I would say, just picking up on Ben's comments on Morikawa, he was the one other guy who sort of really appealed to me in that, I guess, from sort of, 33-1 under and in market. But in the end, I decided to go with Cantlay. I think we saw with Schauffele last year, and coming back to my theme about, you know, who really wants to be here and who's going to be motivated. I think Schauffele last year was someone who was hugely motivated. Obviously, he'd been winless for quite a few years, and there'd been a lot of narrative about that. So he was coming off the back of a sort of solid but not really in the hunt on Sunday US Open, and he was someone who was just looking to get that next win in wherever it came. And I think similarly with Cantlay, again, of course, he had a slightly underwhelming major, which sort of backed all into something that'll look good in the record books in years to come. But he obviously will feel that he's got something to prove after last year, where those who watched might remember he had an absolute shocker here on Sunday, shot 76 when he was tied for the lead on the second hole, I think, with eventual winner Schauffele and his good friend. So I think he comes here with something to prove. Obviously, he has a love affair with this course, unlike any of those others at the top of the market, going back to when he performed here as an amateur and shot 60 way back when, 2011, I think it was. He's basically finished between 15th and 11th every single time in the last 5 years, but it should obviously have been a lot better last year. His game did warm up over the weekend at LACC, which, again, you could look at that two ways. Well, he was never in the hunt, and then he did what he does, or, he picked up, or he found something, if you like, and his tee to green game improved over the weekend, and he was really strong on the greens through the week. So I liked him, I wouldn't say by a process of deduction or a process of elimination rather from the guys at the top. I wouldn't want to be siding with Rory this week. Obviously, Rahm's never really done anything here, and I don't see this as a great fit for him. Scheffler has improved here, and I guess we'd expect him to be top 10 again, but again, how much does he want to be here? So other than Morikawa, he was the one that stood out, but I just feel that he's due another win. He's obviously had chances this season, proved a bit frustrating, but he's been knocking in the top 10s for fun. For want of a phrase, I think it could be his turn, and it's obviously a course he loves, so I was happy to nail that my colours to the mast with him. I'm going 3 points win at 12-1.
Great, there you go. Very comprehensive stuff. And yes, some similarities with Morikawa, as you say. Top 14, tied finish for 14th in the US Open. And both of them, if they're hitting it close, won't miss, because neither of them have missed from inside 3 feet this year at all. And they've both had over 500 attempts at it. So not bad going, to be fair. And let's have a look at your second and final outright pick, please, Ben, in this event.
Yeah, I'm going with Stefan Jäger, who's from Munich and, of course, could have been playing in the BMW International Open this week. He has done several times in the past. I don't think he's chosen this because he thinks I can win the Travelers necessarily. I think he's chosen it because they're playing for $20 million and it's a designated event. Were it not a designated event, I suspect he'd have been flying over to play in Europe, and he would have had a good chance. I think he's playing the best golf of his career. And he's one of those players who's just struggled to bridge the gap, having been prolific on the Korn Ferry Tour. If he was playing Korn Ferry Tour right now, he'd be a very strong favourite each week, because we know at that level he's a serious player. But I think he's now sort of convinced himself that he's good enough here. He's made 13 out of 15 cuts this year. When you consider that from start number 2 to start number 11, he lost strokes putting every single week. To keep making cuts in a pool as deep as the PGA Tour is really impressive, and it tells you that every other aspect of his game is firing. A short course where low scores are possible is perfect, and the key for me is that he looks like he's found the putter. A bit like Martin was saying with Andy Sullivan earlier, Stefan Jäger is not a player who has historically struggled with his putter. In fact, his short game has been really the constant throughout his career. The putter's gone off the boil this year, but I think it's come back at a really good time, because some of these summer events will really suit him. So he hits a lot of greens. If that putter lights up, I think he'll have every chance to go well at a massive price here. And if you go back 4 years now, he finished 30th here. I think he's a considerably better golfer. Now, it is a considerably better field. I know some people will sort of assume that this is a designated event and therefore it will be dominated by the big players. But for the reasons we've discussed, that might not be the case. And if you think about the events we've had this year, yeah, we've had the likes of Rahm and Scheffler win them. But we've also had Wyndham Clark at 66s at Quail Hollow. And we had Kurt Kitayama at about 200 to 1 at Bay Hill. So shocks do still happen. And if anyone can produce one this week, I think Jaeger is certainly a player who has everything aligned to produce his best golf at the very least.
Oh, great. Well, that's a lovely theme with a German potentially winning on both sides of the pond. And he's 125 to 1 and a point each way, as you say. And the cut machine he is quite remarkable. I saw out of those, in the last six cuts he's made, four of them have been 27th or better. So he's actually right up there and loves a birdie, fourth in the tour for birdies. And if you want a little side bet, quick start. He is 10th for the first round scoring as well. So let's hope he doesn't get a hopes up and fall away as the weekend progresses. Finally, Martin, your second and final outright pick, please.
Yeah, I'm going to... Well, my second pick is Cam Davis. And before I launch into my thoughts on Cam, a bit of an honorary mention for Sahith Theegala, who I've swerved in this event this year. And Ben will remember I was on in this last year and hid behind my sofa as he made a hash of the 72nd hole, taking the driver and leaving it in the bunker. And still pains me to this very day. So Sahith, I sort of ummed and ahed about, and his odds were obviously a little bit more restrictive. And he seemed, whilst he's a bit of a cut machine still, seems to have gone slightly off the boil. So I've swerved him, and yeah, hopefully that was the right decision. But the man I am going with is Cameron Davis, and he probably comes with a bit of a health warning because he'll either shoot 78-78 and be packing his bags by the Friday evening, or he'll be in the top 10, because that seems to be what's happening with him this season. And the reason I've gone from him this week on the back of a couple of missed cuts and a 79 to round things off in LA is basically his Pete Dye form. Something we haven't mentioned yet is we've obviously got a Pete Dye design this week. Of course, you look for players who correlate well across the Dye courses, TPC Sawgrass, the obvious one, Hilton Head, Amex event, etc. And he pops up on that in spades. Obviously, he was six, I think it was, at TPC Sawgrass earlier this year. He's got a couple of top fives at Hilton Head, including this year again. He's got a third place at the Amex. So he seems to come into his own when he's on a Pete Dye design. And those results, particularly Sawgrass, came on the back of nothing, basically. Hilton Head, he'd shot 80 in his previous start the week before the Masters in Texas. So he's not someone I think we have to be too fussed about what he did last week. He's obviously a hugely talented player who I think will eventually one day be sort of competing, not saying he'll win a major, but I think he'll be popping up on major leaderboards and competing for them, potentially, or competing for one in the future. So I thought that three figures, he was worth chancing to pick up on his love affair with Pete Dye again. He also, look at his course form, not fantastic on paper, but he was actually second halfway last year, 65-66, first two rounds, and then fell away badly over the weekend. He's also got another 66 in the bank from his previous visit, when he then missed the cut with a poor round on the Friday. But he's shown he can score around here. He's certainly someone who's capable and wouldn't be afraid if he got in contention in this company. So I just thought at 125 to 1, he was worth chancing. It really is about the Pete Dye form. And he's shown, as I say, that he's someone who can bounce back after a poor week if the course suits him. So it's 125 to 1, 1 point each way, Cameron Davis.
Right, well, there you go. The Aussie rounds off the selections, and we pointed tee to green strokes gained as a big statistic. And despite having up and down year, he's still 13th there and bodes well. And like Colin Morikawa, is very impressive from 125 yards and in, which on a short course could be crucial. We're going to stick with you, Martin, as well, because you're going to give us your top 30 so we can do our cross-tour double. So who have you got in this event, just quickly, on that market?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going for a bit of a name from the past, someone who I've always been a bit of a fan of, but have swerved over recent years for obvious reasons, and that's Ryan Moore. And I say I've swerved him recently. I think I backed him for the first time in a very, very long time, last time out at Canada at Silly Odds. And whilst he didn't reward us with a place or anything, he did show that I was on the right track and his game's on the right track on the right course, because he was 25th. And the thing with Ryan Moore, I mean, he's only 40 still, so it's not like he's sort of lining up for the seniors yet. So he's got some time in the wilderness unless he really pulls things around. And he's playing this year on a career money list exemption. But the thing with him is he really does have to pick his courses these days. Obviously, he's not going to be competing at you know, a 7,600-yard course or what have you, where there's 600-yard par fives. So he needs to pick his courses. Canada was a great fit for him. This is somewhere where he's performed well over the years as well. Obviously, we've got some other tracks he's historically done the business on coming up, John Deere, Sedgefield Country Club. So this is where he's got a pound to get inside that 125. He needs a couple of big weeks. He crept up to 145 in the FedEx after the Canada week. He's someone who always catches me on a track like this, and he's one of the most accurate hitters on tour. He's fourth in driving accuracy. His iron play is good on short approaches, you know, 100 yards, 125. As I say, it's obviously the longer tracks he struggles on. The putting's been the problem, but he putted a lot better in Canada, and he finished nicely in Canada with a 67 as well, which should have him in good spirits coming to this week. So can he win here? Probably not. Will he top five? He could do, but top 30, certainly, 8-1. I can see him putting another solid week to back up the week in Canada that he delivered last time.
Yeah, great, Ryan Moore. Beautiful. Yeah, great. And I love some of the stats they have on the PGA Tour website. They are fantastic. And if he makes the weekend, he could well feature, because he's second in putts for third round, and he actually has the best scoring average for round four on the whole tour. So it can give you some hope there if he's in contention. And that's cross double, top 30, Ryan Moore and Marcel Schneider on Bet365. You'll get 19-1 on that for 1 point. But that's a very thorough summary of both events. Thank you to the guys. Before we let them go, we'll just do a quick recap on all of the picks from both events. So here is a recap for all the guys' picks this week, starting with the BMW International Open. Martin opened up with Frédéric Lacroix at 66-1 for 1 point each way, and followed it with Andy Sullivan 100-1 for 1 point each way. Ben Coley likes Rasmus Højgaard at 18-1 for 3 points each way, and Sean Crocker at 60-1 for 1 point each way. And his special bet this week is a top 30 for Marcel Schneider at 6-5 with Bet365, and that's a 2 point win. And then looking at the Travelers Championship, Ben Coley tipped Colin Morikawa to do well at 25-1 for 2 points each way, and German Steven Jaeger at 125-1 for 1 point each way. Martin followed up with Patrick Cantlay at 12-1, 3 points win only, and then Cameron Davis at 125-1, 1 point each way. And his special top 30 finish at the Travelers was 8-1 on Ryan Moore for a 2 points win, also with Bet365. That is a cross-tour double, top 30 finish at 19-1 for both Ryan Moore and Marcel Schneider. Thanks again to our guest this week for what was a comprehensive preview into both events. You can find them on Twitter at Ben Coley Golf and at Sundog Monkey. And Martin, you did promise us last time you'd explain the story behind this handle. So just quickly remind us exactly why you are called this.
Yes, goodness, I did, didn't I? I'd forgotten about that. Okay, so it was when I first started my, should we say, sort of semi-career in the world of golf writing and golf tipping. One of the first things I did was look to join Twitter, and I'd never really been one for social media. Wasn't quite sure what it would bring. We're going many years ago here, and it was before I was writing for any publications or anything. So to be honest, I thought I'd probably end up with about sort of five followers or something like that. So I was chatting with a friend, and I said, what should I call myself on Twitter? And we got thinking about these fantastic annual trips to Sawgrass that we'd had over the previous few years, which in my younger days involved sort of late night bars down on Jacksonville Beach and what have you. And if we happen to have anyone who listens in from that part of the world, they may well remember that there was a fantastic bar called the Sundog and another one called Monkey's Uncle. So I plucked this out of the air, Sundog Monkey, and the rest, as they say, was history. And I've sort of been stuck with it since, really. So I have thought about becoming far more professional sounding and being, as it says on the tin, and just being Martin Matthews at Golf Tips or whatever. Yeah, I've sort of thought I need to stick with it, really.
I love it.
Nothing like being named after a bar, and just a shame Sundog Monkey Uncle was clearly already taken. But do of send in any questions, comments to either of these guys on Twitter, and good luck with your bets. And remember to always gamble responsibly, and when the fun stops, stop. We will be back next week to see if we have picked a winner, and we'll look ahead to the Betfred British Masters and the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Enjoy the golf, and see you next time on The Tips.